Hey, I'm Ashley Lemieux, and I'm here to help guide you through your grief and healing. With a little humor and a lot of heart, I help you find your unique path to healing and peace. Each week, dive into the world of mental wellness from navigating grief to embracing who you are. Listen to Healing Her wherever you get your podcasts.
This episode is brought to you by Sprout Living. One of our favorite new snacks are Sprout Living's probiotic almonds. Wildly delicious and irresistibly crunchy, these are the perfect gut-healthy balanced snack. Each pack of the sprouted and activated organic almonds contain 10 billion CFUs of probiotics, 6 grams of clean plant protein, and a variety of other superfood spices and herbs that do the body good.
They're made without seed oils, which we all know are out, and the flavors. The Italian truffle is delicious, and the dairy-free cheddar cheese made with turmeric and nutritional yeast always hits the spot. Honestly, we may never have another chip again. Sprout Living also makes our favorite plant-based protein blends. My personal favorite is the coffee flavor.
If you want to try Sprout Living, you can save 20% off your entire order by using code COURAGEOUS at checkout. Visit www.sproutliving.com and use code COURAGEOUS to save 20%. Give them a try and let us know if you love them as much as we do. You can also find the direct links in our show notes. Welcome to Courageous Wellness. My name is Erica Stein.
And I'm Allie French. And this is a podcast about individual journeys within wellness and how to navigate it all.
After Allie experienced a cancer diagnosis in her 20s,
and Erica went through a self-love journey, we created a platform to interview real people from all walks of life that have combined all types of practices. From physical wellness to emotional and spiritual, we hear courageous stories and focus on why it's important to share them.
We are both certified integrative nutrition health coaches, and together with our community, are learning to live our most purposeful lives by sharing one courageous story at a time.
It takes courage to share these journeys, and by talking about them, we aim to destigmatize the process. We want you to be your own health advocate, feel educated and informed on the latest in health and wellness, and empower you to feel your absolute best.
And because we want to bring forth a wide variety of stories, the opinions of our guests do not necessarily reflect our own, but we hope the diverse and varied stories will empower you to make the best choices for your own life. So join us as we and our community share our courageous wellness.
Hi, everyone. Welcome to this week's episode of Courageous Wellness. We have Jody King, who is a wonderful speaker, artist, just very, very cool lady. I'm so excited for our audience to hear this episode this week with Jody. And as an artist myself, in many ways, I really like resonated with a lot of the themes we spoke with her about this week, especially on valuing yourself and just really wonderful. So I'm excited to finally release this episode. As far as weekly updates go, mine is so exciting. I was called to jury duty. I've been dismissed. And without kind of sharing too much about the case, part of what was really fascinating for me is multiple days I was in the courtroom while the jury, prospective jury, was being interviewed, but I was low enough on the list that I wasn't the first 18 people because they need like 12 plus two alternates. So I got to listen to the questioning, like such deep questioning. It's been a long time since I've been in a courtroom and being like getting so close to being like put on a potential jury. And without talking too much, one of the lines of questioning was about people's personal relationships with alcohol. Fascinating. Mm. Fascinating to see. You know, juries are, it's funny, I said to Erica, short of our international Buddhist organization, lay organization that we practice with, it's truly like the most diverse slice of life, like real life that you can get, because you have people who are all different ages, different religions, different races, different ethnicities, different occupations, just, you know, like it's such kind of it's cool in that way. Like it's a real slice of life.
Yeah.
And, but having everybody, it's so interesting because you really realize that like human beings are fundamentally very similar, you know? And then also a lot of the questioning was around people's personal relationships with alcohol. And I'm talking hours of questioning around this. And so I said to Erica, one of the wildest things for me was to see that, and granted, this is only a slice of 18 people, but predominantly the women were the heaviest drinkers.
Mm, yeah. It's and so interesting.
Of a certain age range, I would say like 25 to 55.
Yeah. It's fascinating.
I'm like, huh, what's going on there? You know?
Yeah.
I think it's probably stress management, if I had to guess, combined with like extreme marketing.
Yeah. And we've done episodes on this, right? We've had Dr. Brooke Scheller on the show twice. We've done episodes on sober curiosity. It when Allie shared this with me after, you know, she was dismissed, it's not surprising, right? It's surprising, but it's not surprising that it is women who are the heaviest drinkers, you know, and, yeah, the marketing of it all. It's just, it's fascinating to me. And it's kind of, it makes you think. And I think as we've explored the sober curious topics on the show, and Allie and I are not sober, but you know, Allie, we've both gone through different explorations with our own drinking. Allie has basically stopped drinking altogether now at this point. Almost, yeah,
pretty,
you know, by
pretty
choice.
Much. Occasionally, like in Japan, I had a little bit, but yeah.
But I think it's really, I think thinking about things like this, the way alcohol is marketed to women, the way women are predominantly drinking right now, you know, with all of this messaging, mommy wine, rosé all day. It makes you think. It makes you think. It's reflective. And actually it's funny because this week, one of our sponsors that we're working with is Hop Water. And I love Hop Water so much.
Love.
And I actually think it's such a good alcohol-free alternative. I didn't drink for a year, and the peach flavor, I think it's like rosé. I call it like rosé in a can. It doesn't actually, it's sparkling water and it's hop water. It has the hops, but to me, the peach flavor, it's my favorite. Mm. And it feels like a rosé mocktail. Cause I'm not really a huge fan of non-alcoholic wines. Even when I haven't found one that like I love so much.
Yeah.
I can take them or leave them. So the peach hop water is my favorite, but I think
and I do love like a cold beer, especially in the summer. Yeah. I really do. Yeah. But I'm like perfectly satisfied with hop water, and it's fun. I'm happy that they're a sponsor now because I've been a fan for a long time anyway. So it's not, you know, it's very authentic when we talk about it.
It's easy to talk about for sure.
So, what's your update?
My update. It's so funny. I'm talking about hop water. You're talking about alcohol. We're recording this on Friday. I am going wine tasting tomorrow with my sister-in-law and some of her girlfriends. So, you know, getting into that mode. But, you know, I was sick all week with a cold. I think there's a nasty cold going around. It's definitely going around in at least like the greater Los Angeles area that we live in. And so I have been so out of my routine this week, right? Like they gave me a steroid at urgent care because I was so sick. I couldn't sleep all night because of it. And then I was, you know, so my sleep's been disrupted. My routine has been off and I am such a routine girl that I feel like I'm going a little crazy. Like now at Friday, I am losing it. So I'm really excited to have like fun time at the winery tomorrow. But then I just like, I have to get my, like, I got to get my shit together. I got to get my routine back. So that's my update. That's not really a big update, but I've had a cold. I'm on the other side of it. I feel better, but you know, it's just everything from my movement to my sleep to my, you know, like even what the foods that have been on my plate, you know, it's just like, I'm not feeling great. And I just got to get myself back into my routine. So hopefully next week, I'll be back in my routine and I'll feel better. But I'm like you talk about, Allie, I'm like a house plant. We're house plants. Like I need a little watering. I need a little sunlight.
Sunshine.
I need to take care of myself. So not really an exciting update, but I've been sick and I know we need to rest. I know I need to let myself rest, but I got to get back into my routine because I'm just, you know, like I have so much laundry to do. It's just all that stuff that life piles up with when we get sick. And so, yeah, ready to feel better, ready to get back into human mode.
Well, we have a great episode. So should we get into it?
Yes, let's do it.
Today, we sit down with Austin-based professional artist, educator, and entrepreneur, Jody King. After raising two daughters while having multiple successful ventures, Jody decided to start painting on a whim. All she wanted was to do something for herself. What she discovered, though, is that art is more than that. It's an outlet, a way to channel and experience life in a more intimate way. She never dreamt of it being a profession. Painting on canvas just happened to be that one thing that made her feel completely free. Fast forward to today, Jody is a prosperous artist with hundreds of sold paintings and a global audience. She worked with thousands of artists around the world, is a successful artpreneur, mentor, and speaker who's on a mission to help others discover the healing power of art.
Today, Jody shares valuable insights with us on how the use of art can have a positive impact on our lives by reducing stress, expressing emotions that are difficult to share verbally, allowing ourselves to become more present, and help lead to self-exploration. In this episode, we discuss how the power of creativity can have a positive impact on one's life, how to foster inspiration in your daily life, rediscovering passions at any age, personal transformation, and talk art's positive impact on overall wellness. Allie and I really enjoyed this episode. We love talking to Jody, and we know you're going to love it too. So enjoy the episode.
So my life has recently changed, and this is for real entirely. Erica has been on me to get an air doctor for years, and I finally got one this past week. And within minutes, no joke, I noticed the quality of the air in my bedroom felt different. And my husband noticed it too. And after sleeping with it for one night, I woke up the next morning with zero congestion for the first time in memory. Also, I had an air filter in my room, but air doctor is like completely on a different level.
It is on a different level. And when I found out that Air Doctor was a new sponsor of the Courageous Wellness podcast, I was so excited. I have two in my home, and I have been telling Allie for literal years to get one. And all of my friends and family have one in their home. My mom is actually who originally introduced me to Air Doctor. So I'm so excited about today's sponsor. We know that Americans spend an average of 90% of their time indoors and take about 20,000 breaths a day. The indoor air that we breathe is 2 to 5 times more polluted than outdoor air, and in some cases, up to 100 times more polluted, according to the EPA. And did you know that air pollution is responsible for nearly 7 million premature deaths globally? So my solution is Air Doctor. Air Doctor is an air purifier that captured the attention of established media outlets such as CNN, Money, ABC, and more. Air Doctor filters out 99.99% of dangerous contaminants so your lungs don't have to. This includes pollutants such as allergens, pollen, pet dander, dust mites, mold spores, and even bacteria and viruses that make you sick.
I really can't say enough good things about it, and I'm honestly have had a life-changing experience. And Air Doctor also comes with a 30-day breathe easy money back guarantee, so that if you don't love it the way I love it, just send it back for a refund minus the shipping. So you can head to airdoctorpro.com and use promo code CWPOD, and you'll receive up to $300 off air purifiers. Exclusive to podcast customers, you will also receive a free 3-year warranty on any unit, which is an additional $84 value. Unlock this special offer by going to airdoctorpro.com and use promo code CWPOD.
So welcome, Jody. We are very excited to have this conversation with you. And to get us started today, if you can share a little bit about your personal background and how it led you to becoming a working artist.
You bet. Well, first of all, I'm over the moon to be here to talk with you guys, but also to talk about this. But I've been a professional artist for over 20 years, but I'm old. So things that I didn't start until I was 35. And weirdly, I was not the kid who loved to draw or loved to paint or loved to do anything from a visual arts perspective. But from the time I was 3 years old until I was about 13, I danced. And when I say dance, I mean, I dance like 4 or 5 days a week. So I think that was my creative expression, but I absolutely never considered myself an artist ever. And then I woke up one day when I was 35 and I literally was just like, I think I want to paint out of nowhere. No clue how it happened. I just think I want to paint. And so I embarked on this journey. It was this New Year's Day. I was with a group of friends and we were having this, what do you want to do this year conversation? And one of the friends there, he was an artist. And I said, you know what? I think I want to paint. And he looked at me and he just shrugged. He was like, so paint. I go, oh, no. I don't know how to paint. I didn't go to school. I don't know how to paint. And this was before YouTube and really kind of any sort of online anything. And he just shrugged and just goes, just paint. And so I did. I went to the local art supply store in my little town, which was hardly anything. And I grabbed some supplies and I started painting. And it was like a knowing happened, which was so odd because it wasn't anything I had experienced before. And I just started I did what most people do. I think I started painting a vase of flowers that was in my house. And then I painted a picture of my daughter. And then I painted a picture of my other daughter. And they didn't suck, which was surprising. You would think they would have been absolutely horrible, but they didn't suck. They sucked, but they didn't suck hard. You know, they just sucked a little. And it was enough for me to keep going. And then my husband at the time, we had this little bungalow that was built in 1914, and we were in a little town. And it was a Christmas tour of home, so it wasn't like this. This wasn't Architectural Digest. It was like, can we put your house on the tour of homes? It was just a cute little house, and so I had to clean. So I had to pick up the paintings off the floor. So I hung some on the wall, and then people started coming through. And weirdly, people were asking, who's the artist? Who did that? And I was like, get the fuck out of here. Seriously? Really? I ended up selling a painting that day for $900. I mean, it's like, I couldn't believe it. And then one of the people that came through said, she wanted to carry my art in her store. And so you would think that that would be like, oh my gosh, I've made it. That's amazing. But it really scared the bejesus out of me. It scared me so bad because I thought, I have no idea what I'm doing. I better figure this out. So I just bought books and things like that. But the thing is, and I think this is important, is that up until that point, I had been an entrepreneur. My family, I grew up with a family of entrepreneurs. I had successful businesses. I had owned wine bars and I had done a lot of really successful ventures and things. And so I was never indoctrinated into the starving artist trope, as you know, if you are a performing artist, you're like, oh, well, you better have a plan B, any kind of artist, right? Yep, plan B. So I just thought, well, I'll just apply these business skills, marketing and all that. I'll just apply this to art. And it ended up working really, really well. But I think more than anything, it was a mindset that, that really helped to fuel it. And then, and we can talk about this more later, but then what ended up happening is it had these benefits to myself personally. As I was spending time painting and stepping into my creativity and doing things for myself other than just raising kids and, identifying as a wife and as a mother and as a daughter, it really brought me back to me. And now it's been 20 years and I'm still doing it.
That's an awesome story. Thank you for sharing a bit about your background. And it's fascinating. As we were talking prior to recording, actually, Eric and I both come from entertainment backgrounds, but I was a performing artist for many years, a working one, which is great. And I still do some performing work occasionally. But come from a family with lineage of artists, different types. My grandfather was a painter.
Amazing.
And a wonderful kind of in his region, pretty well known, and was an art professor. And it's interesting, though, I think what really, when we were doing some research on you, what was kind of a fascinating take was this mindset component, which I'd love to go into a little bit, because I do think, and I've seen it in my own family generationally, there's oftentimes this mindset in the arts where it's like, oh, well, you know, it's really hard, so there's always a backup. Okay, that's not necessarily, it's not illogical to kind of have some other things as well. But there was this sort of, yeah, mentality where it's like there's a disconnect, and it's hard when your art has to also become a commodity, where it's like, there's this whole sense of like identity stuff that gets mixed up in it all, especially when money is involved. But we have to earn a living, and this kind of work has a lot of value too. And it's fine if it's just, if it's fine if it's not your primary profession, and if it is, you have to be able to live. But sometimes there's and not only live, people should be able to have the opportunity to I think thrive too.
Absolutely.
And sometimes there's this idea, and I've had professional situations years past, one in particular that I can think of, where I remember the leader of this, is like the director of this big sort of show. It was a very unique kind of show, but it was like a large sort of band and cabaret show that would tour around the country. There was I overheard a thing where it was like someone was saying to another person who was basically saying, we need to get paid more. Well, there's this mentality of like, you're not a real artist if you're not just doing it for the love of it.
Oh yeah. Right.
It's like this sort of like, oh,
the purist.
You're not a purist. It's not, it doesn't have as much value if you're worried about getting paid, which is really just like BS. And also a bit of a scam, because some people were getting paid and others weren't. And so I think, like, if you value that, you're somehow lesser than, or this idea of like, oh, I'm just a humble artist, like hat in hand kind of thing. I'll take whatever I can get. I'm just lucky to be here. Mm-hmm. And yes, we might have fortune to be doing work that we love, but there's sort of like all this noise around the mentality of it all. And I think this applies to like, this can apply to many different mediums, but I'm just curious, because you had successful businesses prior to becoming a professional artist, did you find that you had like, did you ever kind of go grapple with those ideas when you started to pursue your art, or was it able to be something that you quickly sort of cast aside? I mean, like, how do you price your first piece that you sell? How do you know how to price that? Things like that, as far as the mentality goes, I'd love to just hear your sort of thoughts and your own process with those ideas.
Yeah. Well, first of all, as far as the pricing goes, I was just, you know, guessing. The first painting that I sold, I just thought, well, it surely wouldn't be priced over $1,000. I'm brand new. but I priced it at $900. And the woman said sold immediately. And, you know, as I went along, and then my, you know, other paintings that were quite small were selling for $400, and people were like, what, how are you charging that? And I just thought, there's something to this. I think it starts from an internal place of what we are going to believe ourselves and our worth is. Now there is a way to, like, now I help artists price their art, because it was different back then. You didn't have the internet. You didn't have saying, you know, comparing apples to apples. I like to say it's like real estate. You have to know, you know, same size, same style, same, you know, there's a lot that goes into it. And I do that. But So what I started realizing is that, and what I'm so convicted on now, is that the world will always try to tell you who you are. Always. And so it's not ever going to change until artists decide who they are, which is going to be a whole mindset shift, right? Because, you know, again, we have all of these tropes, but when you think about artists historically, it's unbelievable. Like, we know the history of the world through hieroglyphics, right? Through the art that was, you know, carved into the walls. We, if we have a breakup, you know, and we are in the dirt, and then we hear that breakup song, it validates our experience, right? And then you've got, I always think of, you know, Usher was just on the Super Bowl, but I think of Marvin Gaye and Usher, and you have all these folks that are just like, you kind of need a little artistic music sometimes to, like, it changes everything. Art changes everything. And yet, other than the priesthood, there is not a profession in general that assumes poverty. And that assumes poverty when we are making such a contribution to the human experience. And so I get crazy passionate about that. I'm like, all right, well, if it's not going to change from the outside, it has to change on the inside. And so what ends up happening is we talk about it from an artistic perspective. We talk about it about art and pricing. But what inevitably occurs is that it mirrors back to it. It shores us up as human beings in every way, in every capacity. We stop settling for other things in other parts of our lives as well.
I really love a cold one on a hot summer day, but as many of our listeners know, I have greatly reduced my consumption of alcohol. For many years now, I've been a big fan of hop water because it's really refreshing, but is also non-alcoholic. It's a sparkling hop water crafted with adaptogens and nootropics for added mood-boosting benefits. One of my favorites is the Ruby Red Grapefruit. It's super zesty and tart, and it's perfect for summer. It's a wonderful alternative to beer or rosé, and you actually feel good after drinking it. Hop water, that's H-O-P-W-T-R, is purposely crafted without calories, carbs, or sugar. It tastes delicious, but it won't derail any health goals you may have.
Also, hop water has so many amazing flavors, and I love that they have a variety pack with the classic, blood orange, mango, and lime, and there's really something no matter your flavor preference. Trust me, hop water is the perfect beverage to enjoy all year long, and we know you'll love it too. For a limited time, Courageous Wellness listeners get 20% off your first purchase, plus free shipping when you order 24 cans or more. Order now at our exclusive URL to get this offer at hopwater.com/CWpod. That's hopwtr.com/CWpod. Don't wait. Go now to hopwtr.com/CWpod.
Yeah, it's fascinating. And I think your journey and your conviction, it's so, it's just really powerful. And as you're talking, I'm thinking, because, right, you said you were 35 years old and it was New Year's and you were like, I'm just going to go paint, you know? And, you know, we have listeners of all ages who listen to the show, from the teens and 20s all the way to the 70s plus, but, bulk of our listeners are young women in their 30s. And so I'm sure a lot of people can relate to, I just turned 35, being 35. And, you know, I think with art specifically, we've done a lot of episodes on career change or, you know, pivoting, but there's something about art and artists in general, right? I know you're a painter, but I think we can, like, be it, like you said, dancing, painting, singing, whatever it may be, that feels like, well, the time has come and gone, right? To pursue those types of things at a certain age, because it feels so skill specific, right? It's like when you're a kid, you're in dance class, so you go to summer art camps or whatever it is. There's all of these like steps. And then of course, like we're talking about, there's like the passion or the people who've been like fighting for their careers for like 20 years. And so it can be a little like, well, I love to dance or I love to paint or I love to sing, but who am I at 30 something or 40 something or whatever to take this up? And so, but I think a lot of people have it in their hearts, right? Like I know it. Like I've even talked to people my parents' age or their friends, and they have art in their hearts, you know? And so, but I think that barrier sometimes can be larger than maybe any other sort of pivoting. Like you said, entrepreneurs will do a million things. You know, I have an entertainment background. I now work in wellness, right? Like there's tons of pivots, but for some reason, pivoting to art, I feel like it's in a lot of people's hearts, but it's not something that's often explored. I think it takes a lot of courage. And so I don't know if you can speak to that or how, if anybody listening has some art in their hearts, how to begin?
I would love to speak to that. And I'm so glad you brought up courage, because it takes so much courage to be an artist, because not only are we creating a product, but in order for the product to sell and to be meaningful and to be worth anything at all, it has to be honest and it has to be good, which means that the artist not only needs to learn the skill set, this is if you are a singer, if you are a dancer, if you are a painter, if you are an actor, if you are a writer, if you are a comedian, it doesn't matter what the artistic journey that you have, you have to have the skill set. So a lot of people say, well, I don't have that skill set. Well, oh my gosh, it's 2024. You can go get that skill set somewhere. You don't have to go to four-year university and figure it out. You can go get that, right? The other thing is the art that you create has to come, it has to be powerful, and you can only make powerful art. Again, let's go back to it. Singing, dancing, it doesn't matter, painting, whatever. If you know who you are as a person and what it is you want to express, like it has to come from you. Otherwise, your art looks like everybody else's art. And so tapping into it and having the courage to turn yourself inside out, basically, in order to make an impact for others. Of course, people are scared shitless. I mean, how scary is that? So first, you have to learn the skill set. And second, you have to tap into what makes you you. But neither one of those should be permanent barriers to entry.
You just reminded me of my favorite lyric. I'm a real musical theater nerd in my heart, which most of our listeners probably know, but it's a Stephen Sondheim lyric, and it's from Sunday in the Park with George, which is, you know, based loosely on George Seurat, the painter. And he says, anything you do, let it come from you, then it will be new. And it's sort of what you were just talking about. And I think, you know, you said you had this kind of calling in a way that you're like, I want to paint, you know, I have to paint. There's like, you had a mission in painting. And I think we can have these callings. And even if we can get past the skill set barrier, as you said, it's a lot more accessible now to find that skill set, to develop that skill set, get the education, you know, versus years ago where you had to get like perhaps a formal education around it. And you have something honest you want to put out into the world. And I think we all, and this is sort of where like the wellness component or the self sort of exploration component comes into this conversation. But I think sometimes we grapple in our culture, our society, to constantly, I don't know, be producing or having output in whatever our fields are based on external pressures. Mm-hmm. And so
Perhaps you were just at the point in your life when you were like, oh, I feel like the calling to do this, where you knew and you had deep conviction in that. And actually, I think it sort of makes sense that you had that in your mid-30s, because I don't know, I'm speaking for myself, but it wasn't really until my early to mid-30s where I really started to feel like I know myself in a different way. So I think like from an evolutionary and a growth kind of perspective, that makes sense, where you're like, give less shits about pleasing, yeah, especially for women, you know, like everybody else. But is there any, you know, even now as an artist, is there any work or any practices that you do to sort of tap into making sure you're keeping that sort of authenticity in your creative expression? Because I do think, like, even not even consciously, we're so sort of affected, like whether it's, you know, oh, I'm a successful painter, but I saw this person's what they're producing right now, or I saw this, you know, there's like comparison, there's all this stuff. So are there any practices that you do to cultivate sort of connection to self and that honesty in your art?
This episode is brought to you by Mind Happy. We all spend way too much time in front of screens. I know I do. And I find myself craving creative yet restful analog activity. I never thought I would long for the downtime of my childhood in the 90s making friendship bracelets at summer camp. This is why we were so excited when we discovered Mind Happy. Mind Happy is a lifestyle and wellness brand centered on thoughtful creativity to help people craft fulfilling moments, connections, and self-care rituals through purposeful play. Mind Happy provides curated monthly deliveries that promote phone-free activities like knitting, coloring, and crafting. They believe that play is one of the most effective ways to relax and re-energize in our daily lives.
Mind Happy's founder is an ex-Amazon executive who leveraged similar activities to alleviate her own burnout. All the phone-free activities, from music box building to coloring, are selected based on science, restoring mental clarity, energizing connections, reducing anxiety, and facilitating fulfilling moments. It is curated monthly self-care delivered right to your door. We love that the products from each box are primarily sourced from small women-owned business. For 15% off your first month subscription, go to mindhappy.com. That's mindhappy.com and use code COURAGE15 at checkout.
Yes, that's a great question. I just want to touch a little bit on the age thing, though, of like when this happened for me. Because I do think you're right. I think there is sort of almost like a self-reckoning that happens when at that point of your life. For me, I had children a little bit younger. So my second child was born when I was 31. So I was kind of in the throes of raising young children at the time. And I also was an entrepreneur. And then I also was, you know, a wife, and like home. Like I had all of those juggling, all of those balls, but all of those things were pouring out of me and not pouring into me. Right. And then I think my body, countenance, spirit, whatever you want to call it, just knew it was not sustainable without something that, that fed me. And so that's why I think I was drawn to it so much. And then later, when I really, really wanted to, you know, stop just painting for gift stores and things, but really wanted to up my level of work, the quality and everything, I had a mentor. And she asked me the why question before Simon Sinek is now asking the why question, which I'm so glad the why question is out there now. But she said, why do you paint? And I said, well, because I love it. It was just fun. Something just for me. I have a good time. I make pretty things. And she said, okay, well, why painting? Why not gardening? Why not cooking? Why not, like, why painting? And at first I was really annoyed by the question, like, why can't that be enough? Right? Why isn't just to do something for myself enough? But remember, I wanted to up level my art to really make an impact. And so when I dug into why at that age I wanted, and by this time I was probably a little bit closer to 40, I realized that the reason I had chosen painting is because I would have a visual representation that I mattered. Like there was something on the outside of me that showed I was here. And I really hadn't felt that before. And listen, I had gone through counseling and like all kinds of things, but it was the thing that I needed for me. And I'm sure that because you may have listeners who may feel like they're drowning in the, you know, and all of the things of life, and maybe they just want to do something for them. And I like, don't ignore it, because something is there for you. And now I forgot the second part of the question. Oh wait, my practices. What do I do to cultivate that? So I created and coined a phrase accidentally years ago, and I called it honest art, because somebody asked me, because I was doing so many abstract paintings at the time, and so, well, I still do, which is like endless, right? And they like, how do you know when an abstract painting is finished? How do you know? And so I sat with the question and I said, two things. Number one, would I hang it on my wall forever? Like not for a couple of weeks, but like forever. And do I love it enough to do that? And number two, was it an honest expression of who I am, or an honest expression of where I was in that moment? And that meant that I wasn't looking on Instagram, that I wasn't looking at other artists' work, that I wasn't trying to paint like somebody else's art that I saw in a gallery. It was just a full, honest expression. And if I could answer yes to both of those, then the art was finished. So that meant that I had to cultivate things that helped me to create honest art. And for me, I'm so ADD. Oh my God, shiny object syndrome like crazy. I am so ADD. And so that meant that I needed to cultivate a practice of being present so that I would even know what I was feeling to be able to express it, right? And because I could use busyness to avoid anger, I could use busyness or, you know, whatever to avoid sadness, all kinds of feelings, right? So my practice now is I meditate. I have a daily meditation practice, which sounds like, oh, I'm so evolved. Not really. I mean, it could last anywhere from 10 minutes to 30 minutes or whatever. That's my meditation practice. But I also journal. So meditation and journaling are really, really important. And the reason the journaling is so important is because I was taught when I was 13 years old, something called stream of consciousness journaling. Are you guys familiar with stream of consciousness journaling? I'll explain it real briefly, but it just means it's just not self-editing, right? You just pick up a pen and paper or journal, and you try not to pick it up, pick your pen up to think. You just keep writing, And if you don't know what to write, you write, I don't know what to write. So it like almost trains you to stop self-editing what is coming out of your body or coming out of your heart, coming out of your mind. And so that practice is so helpful when you're painting, because it like you tend to not self-edit as much, which tends to make your art much more honest. So between journaling and meditating so that I can become really, really present, those things have been super important for me to create art that feels real and honest and true.
Yeah. Wow. Thank you for sharing all of that. And we just did an episode all about journaling, and I'm a big journaler. I have been, and I call it almost brain dumping, that stream of consciousness. Like I will just brain dump. And I have found it to be such a powerful healing modality as well. But something you just mentioned kind of sparked this question in me that I know you also talk about a lot, which is the importance of creative expression, right? And I think it can be hard, right? Especially if we actually talked about this a little bit in our conversation about journaling, if this isn't something, it doesn't always feel safe, right? Like it doesn't always feel safe, but I think it can be, I think it is very important too. And so can you maybe share with us why creative expression is so important for all of us, regardless of if we are choosing to pursue it professionally or not, and what to do if it doesn't necessarily feel safe.
Yeah. Well, a lot of people won't even attempt creative expression because it feels unsafe, right? So they won't even attempt it. And that's totally understandable. But at the same time, I think it's important to know that anytime we do anything new, it's not going to be great, right? But we're not talking about great expression. We're talking about honest expression. And to be able to sit with ourselves, like a lot of people won't go to therapy. They just won't do it. Like, okay, that's totally fine. But you gotta do something with what's going on inside. And there was a book written by the Nagoski sisters. Are you guys familiar with burnout? I only learned about burnout because I'm such a huge Brené Brown fan. I was listening to her podcast and she was talking to the Nagoski sisters. One is a PhD in psychology and one is a head of music at Yale. Anyway, so Brené said this to the Nagoski sisters. She said, "You guys taught me something that I never knew," which meant now my interest is piqued because I think Brené Brown knows everything. And so, and she says, "What I didn't know, what you taught me, is that stress has a three-part cycle." She said, the first part of the cycle is there's the stressor, right? The inciting thing, or maybe it's many things, but it's the stressor. The second part of the stress cycle is that now it's in our bodies. Now we've got it. And the third part is we move it through. And that's what we do for our own health, which is what the book Burnout was about, because one of them ended up in the hospital. She was so completely depleted. And so they talked about the things that we can do to avoid burnout, to stay healthy. And they listed seven different things that you can do. One of them is obvious, crying, right? But so many people don't want to do that even. But one of them was creativity. That we could process our stress and our shit through creativity. I mean, that is so amazing. So I know it can seem like really scary for people, but it might be the actual thing that we need. And creativity, by the way, it's fascinating. First of all, we're all creative. So let's just get that out there. There was a study that was done where they went into kindergarten classrooms and they said, "Everyone here who's an artist, raise your hand." And the 100% of the kids raised their hand. And then they went into, I think it was third or fourth grade, 50% of the kids raised their hand. They went to middle school, said, "Everyone here who's an artist, raise their hand." One kid raised their hand. So we are all creative in our own way, whether you're an engineer or you do lawn work or you paint like I do. We're all creative. So embracing some sort of creative practice literally has neurological benefits as well as it calms our limbic system. So I have seen in my own life how it's healed me through trauma. And between journaling, creativity, painting, whatever you need to do, it's not going to hurt you. I promise. I know it might be scary, but it can only help.
Yeah, it makes sense. And it's interesting how that like example you gave with the children, how we start to sort of self-identify different, like as we get older, kind of put ourselves in sort of boxes. But the fact that we all innately, by being human, have the ability to be creative. And I think more than ever, you know, I think I've always valued the arts because it's been such a huge part of my life and my family valued it too. So it's not like, but I think more than ever, you know, creativity means you're putting something out there. And when you were talking about the stress cycle, you know, Erica and I practice, a type of Buddhism together. And there's this idea of turning poison into medicine, or the real like sort of philosophical concept behind the practice is creating value, like being value creative. And because I think at the end of the day, that's the opposite of destruction is creation. You know, like it's like the idea of like the opposite of war isn't necessarily peace or neutrality. It's creativity. It's like putting something of value into the world. And so when we have the ability to do that for ourselves, like that energy gets, even if it's the stress, even if it's the trauma, even if it's the stuff, the gunk that like gets inside of us, inside the body, if we have something to create, like create value, we can create, like transmute it into valuable things for the world and for other people and for beauty and for ourselves. And so when you're speaking about that, that makes sense. But it's like, it can actually be, I think, a really important and revolutionary thing to do is to tap into whatever, and like you said, whatever medium. It could be culinary arts, it could be, you know, gardening and you know, playing some music, whatever it might be, but just to put something out there has, I think, ripple effects that sometimes we don't even think about.
Because I agree. And I think we're needed in this time more than any other.
Yeah. Yeah, I would agree. Yeah. So thank you so much for sharing this and your point of view on it all. It's really cool. And you also help other artists now. You've created a community and education around this. So can you share with us a little bit about that component of your work?
Absolutely. So I have an absolute calling and a passion for supporting artists. I have a daughter who's a writer, and I have another daughter who, I have two daughters and another daughter who is does comedy. She had gone to school for performing arts as well. And of course I identify as an artist. And so I have a real passion for, artists, because I believe we are the feelers of the world. Like we are sensitive, right? And as Anita Morjani said, I don't know if you're familiar with Anita Morjani, but, she had a near death experience, and she talked about it, and she's written a couple books about it, but she wrote a book called A Sensitive is the New Strong. And how we need more of us in the world to support the world and its evolution and our own. So my passion for artists is in supporting them, number one, in their creativity and, you know, for helping them, giving them what I didn't have at the time, which was support in their skill set, so that they can go from creating a lot of art that is like, quote, fugly. You know, it's like, okay, this is super fun, but now I just got a bunch of shit laying around, right? It's like, so supporting them and elevating their work to a place they're proud of, right? So that there's that creativity component of it. But then there's the other component of it. It's like, can we just stop with the needing to have a plan B? Let me teach you how to have a thriving business doing it. Both, I think, can be like, we can hold both at the same time without negating either of those. It just depends on what you want to do with it. So I do that. The other thing that I've done, I do both, by the way. I have a podcast called The Honest Art Podcast. And so if people want to take a listen to what I do, there's that. But then the other thing that I did, to your point of picking the stuff and doing something beautiful with it. So what I did was I went through a terrible, horrible, no good, very bad divorce, which they all are. Come on, let's just say they all are. And so what does an artist do? Well, you turn yourself inside out and you put it, make art out of it. So I wrote a book. I'd always wanted to write a memoir, and now I had a reason to write a memoir. So I wrote a memoir that comes out in October called Messy, which is going to be, I think, super fun. But supporting artists in their humanity and what they want to do with the world is just, I'm really, really passionate about it. We need more of us. We need more sensitives.
Yeah. And I think community, right? Like I really find there's a lot of value in community, especially with like-minded people. Even I've just done it twice at the time of recording, but I recently started doing somatic workshops, and it's in a community, and which is actually really intimidating, but it also makes you feel really held and safe and seen. And and I think that's beautiful. Like, as Ali, you mentioned too, like the concept of poison into medicine, or I know we hear a lot like pain into purpose. You were able to not only create art, but now you have community to help others create art too. And I can't wait for your book. It sounds incredible. And
it's a little saucy.
I can't wait. And I'm a little curious too, because you've mentioned a couple times, right, how creativity has really helped you work through, you know, trauma and difficult moments in your life. And so before you had art, I'm just right, you were an entrepreneur, you were in this, like, I guess my question is, what did you have a tool before, or was it really when you found this tool that you realized, wow, like I was missing this component to heal, or I didn't realize maybe how stuck I really was before I had this tool, you know? Cause I think about that sometimes, like we don't know it until we know it, but just since you've mentioned it a couple of times, I'm curious, like what was the before?
It was called wine.
Oh my God. I love it.
That's really funny. And I'm sure pretty accurate for a lot of people.
Yeah, no, I didn't really have an effective tool or really a positive tool. I mean, I had spent more hours in therapy than I probably had spent in sleep. I mean, I had spent so many hours in therapy, but I didn't, like, that wasn't a daily, I didn't feel like that was really a daily tool, like the tools that I use now. So like the output might be the right word, that is the art now, but it's the tools of the daily practice, like what we're talking about, of the journaling, the meditation and community. Oh my gosh, daily community. And then the results of all of that is the art. It's kind of like cooking, right? You have to add a little this and little that, and then you get to enjoy it. Right. So that I didn't have an effective tool.
Creativity. No, thank you for sharing that. I'm also so curious, what is your astrological sign?
You won't be surprised. Huh. Aries.
I knew it. I knew it. I knew it. I knew it. Do you know your moon and your rising, or just your sun?
Yes. It's either, all right, Leo moon, Gemini rising.
Yeah, I could feel your fire. Allie over here is a triple Aries. Aries, Aries, Aries.
Mm-hmm. Oh my gosh. High five, sister.
No, I knew you were an Aries. I'm a Libra, so I'm your sister sign. I have what y'all need, and you have what I need. We're sisters. And then I'm an Aquarius moon, Capricorn rising. So, but I'm pretty much all air and fire, except for that Capricorn rising that keeps me grounded. But I ground in Aries.
Grounded. I've heard of that. I've heard of grounded.
Yeah.
It was so awesome talking to you today. I'm sure we could talk to you for another hour. But as we begin to wrap up, we ask all of our guests three wrap up questions. We've touched a little bit on the first, but I'm curious, at this season of your life, what does your daily self-care practices look like now? And do you have any non-negotiables in your day?
So my non-negotiables and daily practices are, meditation every day for sure. Prayer and meditation. That's how even if I put it off, I don't start my work day without it. So even if I don't start till noon, I'm not starting until I meditate. And then I will, even after all this time, I'll do whatever not to meditate. I don't know. It like just to sit still. So meditation is for sure. And then exercise is a big one for me. It really affects my mental health if I don't exercise. So those are my non-negotiables.
Thank you for sharing that. And then the next question we always ask is, what does being courageous mean to you?
Well, being courageous for me means telling the truth of not just like my truth, what it means to be myself and the truth of my experiences. And in fact, before I named the book, what it messy, it was called Truth Over Consequences, because I think it's more important to tell our truth or to speak our truth than to be concerned with how someone else is going to feel about it.
Yeah. Thank you. And then the final one, you actually already referenced one, but do you have a book that you would want to recommend to our audience? It could be on anything, just something that you love and means something to you personally.
Oh, there's so many. So many. Okay, books that I love. So Women Who Run with the Wolves has been a great one. The Artist's Way, another one. And, you know, Rick Rubin's new book that he has out on creativity. I can't remember the name of it right now, but those would be my three at the moment.
Thank you so much. And if anybody wants to find you, follow you, work with you, where can they do that?
They can go to my website, jodieking.com. It's an I-E, J-O-D-I-E-K-I-N-G.com. Or they can follow me on Instagram, JODIE_King. Or if they need some support in their own art practice or in their own creativity, you can take a listen at the Honest Art Podcast.
Awesome. Thank you, Jodi.
You're welcome. This was so fun.
Thanks for tuning in to another episode of Courageous Wellness. Tune in every Wednesday for a new episode featuring a different guest each week. Subscribe, rate, and write us a nice review. And you can also follow us on Instagram at Courageous Wellness or get in touch via our website, www.courageouswellness.net, where you can also find additional info about our health coaching services, virtual group events, newsletter, and more. Until next week, I'm Allie.
And I'm Erica, and we're Courageous Wellness.
Seeking the truth never gets old. Introducing June's Journey, the free-to-play mobile game that will immerse you in a thrilling murder mystery. Join June Parker as she uncovers hidden objects and clues to solve her sister's death in a beautifully illustrated world set in the roaring 20s. With new chapters added every week, the excitement never ends. Download June's Journey now on your Android or iOS device, or play on PC through Facebook Games.